poet once said that the universe isn't made of atoms, it's made up out of stories. That's certainly true of our worlds. The stories we tell about our own lives, the stories we tell about other people's lives. These are what give meaning and direction to our actions. So it's good that once a year we stop to reflect on the story of the Buddha. Tonight's the night that marks the day on which he was born. Then 35 years later, the night on which he gained awakening. And then 45 years after that, the night that he passed away. The last two are the big events in his life, what gave meaning to the Buddha's life. And as we practice, they give meaning to our own practice as well. This is called Visakha Pucha. Visakha is the name of the month in Pali. This is the full moon of Visakha. And Pucha means to pay homage. As the Buddha once said, in fact it was on the night of his passing away, there are two ways of paying homage. One is through material things, as we did just now. We took candles, flowers, incense to pay homage to the Buddha. Walked around the sala, which in the old days was a way of showing respect to someone. Before you would talk to them, you'd walk around them three times before you sat down to talk. And then when you left, you'd get up and walk around them three times before you left, always keeping your right to them. It's all called material homage. Then there's homage through the practice, which the Buddha said is the higher of the two forms of homage. So that's what we're doing right now, training our minds. Because that's why the Buddha taught all those 45 years, was to get other people to train their minds in the same way that he had trained his, to make their lives special in the way that he had made his special. Think about it. If he hadn't started thinking when he was a young man that life devoted to sensual pleasures, devoted to power, devoted to beauty, devoted to relationships with other people, if that's where you find your happiness, it's going to end up in aging, illness, and death. The happiness is going to get destroyed. And he wondered if there could be a happiness that was deeper, more lasting, one that wouldn't be touched by aging, wouldn't be touched by illness, wouldn't be touched by death. So he went out in search of that happiness. If he hadn't done that, he would have been just one of many, many princes that history has seen. They've had their little brief moment of power and pleasure and then just lost it all, with nothing really to show for it, except usually for a lot of stupidity that goes around power and goes around influence, sensual pleasures. But instead, he started looking for something better than that. He found it. That's what the story of his awakening is. After many false starts through several years, he finally found true happiness through training his mind in the path that we're practicing right now, developing mindfulness, alertness, concentration, ardency, and developing all these skillful qualities in the mind. He was able to bring his mind to good, solid concentration. He started asking questions. Was this his only life, or were there other lives? In other words, is life preceded by nothing, or is it preceded by other lives? Is it followed by other lives? He remembered back many, many aeons, all the many lives that he had had, all different levels of being, high levels, low levels, no real pattern to it. Through that knowledge, even though it wasn't totally conclusive, it gave two things to think about. One is that the activity of the mind does not end with a body. It goes from one life to the next, and same with a fire that's burning in one house will then go over and set fire to another house next to it, and on and on and on in that way. And that there was very little upward progress. It would go up for a while, then go down, and then go up again, and go down again, and up and up, and no steady progress, no lessons learned, usually, from one life to the next. Next question he asked was, did this apply to him alone, or did it apply to other people as well, other beings as well? That was the second knowledge, when he saw all the beings in the universe dying and being reborn. When they were reborn, they were reborn in line with their actions, skillful or unskillful, done under the influence of right view, i.e. seeing that your actions are important. What you do in terms of body, speech, and mind really does shape your life. Or unskillful actions done under the influence of wrong view, i.e. that it doesn't really matter what you do. So that suggested to him that our actions really do shape our lives. And the pleasure and the pain that we experience comes from our actions, comes from our intentions. And then he asked if he could use that knowledge to put an end to suffering. And then that was the third knowledge on the night of his awakening. He saw that focusing in on the intentions of the mind, that what you experience right now is based on two kinds of things, past intentions and present intentions. And when you make your present intentions more and more skillful, to the point where you don't need to intend anymore, that's when you break through to a deathless happiness. And it was that third knowledge that confirmed the other two knowledges, that it is possible through human efforts to find a true happiness that's not touched by aging, illness, or death, something that's called deathless, because it lies outside of space and time. So that's the narrative of his awakening. After he sat for 7 weeks experiencing the bliss of release, and he decided to teach. First he was doubtful as to whether there'd be anybody ready to follow the same path that he'd followed, but then there was a Brahma, a very high level of Deva, who got upset, saying, after all this effort the Buddha gained awakening, he was not going to teach anybody, so he came down and he invited him to teach. He said, there are beings with little dust in their eyes, they will see the Dharma. So the Buddha confirmed that with his own knowledge, and so he went out to teach for 45 years. And then when he passed away, again on a full moon night in May, or so the tradition tells us, he was freed from the cycle of rebirth, experiencing total freedom. So those are the events we commemorate on this night. What's important about this is that how that story, how that narrative touches the narrative of our lives as we keep coming around year after year after year. It's a challenge. It says, what are you doing with your life? What's important in your life? What are you preparing for in your life? Because we know that human life has a lot of suffering. And we've seen that it has pleasures, too. And so you're going to go running for the pleasures? What kinds of pleasures? What kind of happiness are you going to go running for? As the Buddha said, the desire for happiness is something to be honored, something you take seriously, not in a grim way, but in a concerted and thoughtful and intelligent way. What kind of happiness will satisfy you? When we're practicing, what are we aiming at? And what are the dangers that we see around us? As the knowledges that the Buddha gained on the night of his awakening suggest, that the story, or our story, is not just this one story of being born, growing up, growing old, and then dying. That's just one little chapter in a long, long narrative. Are you prepared for that? Because that moment between the chapters is the tough part of the narrative. when you die, there's no guarantee that everything will be peaceful and calm and serene. It's often just the other way around. Your body is getting to the point where you can't live in it anymore. If there are any people around you, they're getting hysterical. And you have a lot of unfinished business from this particular chapter. And your mind is racing around about what could have been done. And then there's the big question, what's going to happen next? In the midst of all that, you've got to make wise choices. So do you think you're ready for that? That's one of the questions that the Buddha's narrative raises for you. And so it would be a good use of your time now to be prepared. Because you're not just preparing for death, you're preparing for your life as well. How can you live in such a way that you don't suffer? Because so many times we gain the pleasure of relationships, we gain the pleasure of material things, only to see it slip through our fingers. It's like trying to hold water in your hands. And if our happiness is based on that, what will there be left? And especially when you consider the things that we do in order to get happiness, and many times it's very unskillful. And so what you're ending up with is memories and then the karmic results of what you've done. So you have to think carefully about where you're going to look for happiness. Remind yourself that, as the Buddha said, it is through our efforts that happiness is found, and there is a true happiness that can be found if we're really focused and consistent in our efforts. Because sometimes we like to act in a way that suggests that we really do believe that our actions have consequences and that they're important. Other times we act in ways that we'd rather not have our actions have consequences. We're just doing it for the pleasure of the moment, hoping that there's no long-term results. It's this inconsistency that makes the narratives of our lives so jagged, ragged, jumping around. Without any clear purpose, clear motive, clear direction. So it's good that at least once a year that the narrative of our lives touches the narrative of the Buddha's life. Because the narrative of our own lives is many times shaped on other people's narratives, people we admire, sometimes people we're jealous of. We see that they have something, we want it. So it's good to ask ourselves, whose narratives are we patterning our narratives on? And will we do well to pattern it on the narrative of the Buddha's life? To take the challenge offered by his life as a serious challenge. So perhaps we too can taste the happiness that he found, the freedom that he found. So think on these things. And see which parts of the narrative of your life you'd like to change. Because we do have that in our power. The arc of the narrative up to the present moment is something you can't go back and change, but you can make whatever adjustments you want now, many more than you might have imagined. All too often we go through life on automatic pilot without realizing that we do have the potential for change. And see what lessons we can learn from the narrative of the Buddha's life so that we can make a better narrative for ourselves.